Good afternoon, everybody. Shmuel Plotkin coming at you live from Amish Kitchen here in Cincinnati, taking my Sara and my Amram out to lunch as Mendel goes off to Knesset. He's got a bar mitzvah party. And we'll do a slightly truncated class. We have to get on the road. We're still here in Cincy. Didn't expect to be able to be here this hour, but got to get over to Baltimore tonight. Anyway, welcome aboard. It's Labor Day. It's September 2nd, 2024, and we're reading Wisdom from the House of Healing by Rabbi Balk. We're in the middle of chapter 6. Let's mop up chapter 6 and do chapter 7. See how far we can go in about a half hour to 40 minutes or so. Page 171, middle of chapter 6. Call Superman. In a similar vein, I once asked a question to another patient about her code status. Chapman says, you currently have a full code, which means that if, God forbid, something catastrophic should happen to you, the medical team is going to do everything possible to revive you. Is that what you want? No, that's not what I want. Oh, then you want a DNR. A do not resuscitate order. No, I definitely don't want that. I don't understand. What do you want? You said that with a full code, the medical team would do everything possible to bring me back. I want more than that. I want more than the medical team. I want you to call Superman, Batman, and all the other superheroes you can use. Utilize them as well. Well, this was a patient that certainly made her opinion concerning the taking of heroic measures in order to extend her life. Scoring some points, page 172. When I was on call at the hospital on Sundays in the fall and winter months, the same sound came out of almost every room in the entire hospital. The only time that ever happened. What was the sound? It was the sound of football games on the patient's televisions, and in Cincinnati that meant the Bengals. I entered the room of an older woman who was watching the game, a devoted fan who, even if hospitalized, would never miss the Bengals. After a brief conversation, she requested a prayer. I turned down the sound on the television a bit so it wouldn't disturb us. I closed my eyes and began to pray. In the midst of the prayer, she began to get excited. Yes, yes, she cried as I continued. Keep going, don't stop now. I had no intention of stopping. But neither did I understand what was going on. Those were not the usual responses that my prayers elicited. There might be a yes, Lord, or a heal me, Lord, but this was different. I opened my eyes and saw her eyes wide open and following the game. My back was to the TV. I ended the prayer, and by this time she was screaming, great prayer, chaplain. That was a great prayer. Time was running out, and it looked like the game was over, but then the other team fumbled, and we picked it up and ran it back for a touchdown. Your timing was perfect, chaplain. We won the game. Thank you so much for coming to visit me. Hey, if an unintended consequence of praying for a patient is that the local team comes back for an improbable victory and she feels better as a result, who am I to question it? The moral, even if it appears that your team doesn't have a prayer, you still might want to say one anyway. After all, we all know the Lord works in mysterious ways. Page 174, come back. Following a fruitful conversation and a thunderous thank you from the family for what they said was an excellent prayer, I turned toward the door to leave. The family screamed out, no, don't go, chaplain, don't leave, wait. I momentarily had feelings of success and a real impact on this family. I had utilized God's gift of connection and prayer to perfection, and this family had embraced that. They needed me, they wanted me, and they would not allow me to simply walk out that door, never to see them again. I smiled and looked back, whereupon they said, you forgot to turn the volume of the TV back up after you turned it down for the prayer. Welcome back to Earth, Chaplain Andrew. A well-known rabbi often says that God has a wonderful sense of humor. That's Pharaoh Wine. Indeed, and it is often used by him to remind us of our place. Page 175, the chosen people and person. While it is true that today's world, with its advanced systems of transportation and technologies, surely has made this a smaller world than it was before, there are still experiences people continue to have for the first time that surprise me. Such an experience for me is when I encounter a patient who has never met a rabbi before, and in many instances never met a Jew before. Once I was asked to rush to an intensive care unit to visit and pray for a woman who was experiencing heart trouble and difficulty breathing. As I entered the room, the woman continued to look down, as she was very weak and could hardly even raise her head. She didn't speak when I asked her if she would like to pray, but instead just nodded her head yes to the question. After I prayed for her, she now began to speak in a very quiet voice and thanked me for the beautiful prayer. She then lifted her eyes, looked at me, saw the yarmulke I was wearing on my head, and gasped, "Are you one of God's chosen people?" Well, I guess you could say that. "I am so happy you came to visit me today. I have never before met a member of the chosen people. I had always hoped I would be able to meet one of you. I cannot believe this has actually happened, but my life is so fragile right now. Oh, thank you. Thank you." I don't know what happened to this woman, but I was glad she could feel such comfort from her interaction with me in what seemed to be her final hours or days. This was the most precious of various encounters that I have had with patients who were equally gladdened to meet a member of the chosen people. As for the concept of chosenness, a concept established by the Bible itself, see Exodus 19 and Deuteronomy 14, this is not to be viewed as a statement that Jews are more special than others, but that they have a greater burden or obligation, a greater burden of obligation and responsibility that God has asked them to embrace. Indeed, there's an old joke worthy of mentioning to dispel any arrogance that might come along with that designation of chosen people. Man asks God, "God, is it in fact true that we, the Jewish people, are the chosen people?" "Yes, my son, that's correct. The Jewish people are indeed the chosen people." "Well, God, do you mind if I ask you a favor?" "No, my son, not at all. Please go ahead." "Would you mind choosing somebody else the next time?" Every individual should recognize that he has the status of being chosen and should honor God through the completion of the specific assignment for which he has been selected. Every person is chosen to carry his burden and execute his responsibility toward the betterment of society. In the case of the Jewish people, the nature of their chosenness extends beyond the individual and is shared on a national level as well. Page 177, joy as faith. I have to this point emphasized the use of joy as an approach that establishes a connection and fosters an openness that puts a previously uncomfortable individual or family at ease with the chaplain. Excuse me, but beyond these practical benefits in the initiation of a conversation, such joy is indicative of the gesture of faith. A person who has faith understands that God is with him in every situation, that even in his most difficult hour, God has not abandoned him. This has been beautifully documented from its biblical sources by Rabbi Soloveitchik, who noted that in many biblical verses, especially in the Torah, the word joy is usually mentioned in close proximity to the words before God. For instance, V'samachta l'fnei Hashem Elokecha, you will rejoice before God your God. While Jewish tradition, and he gives us a slew of sites, Leviticus 23, Deuteronomy 12, and 14, and chapter 16, and 26, and 27. It's all over the place. While Jewish tradition understands this, and other such phrases as denoting an obligation to rejoice in the temple in Jerusalem, the place where God's presence can be most deeply experienced, a more literal and perhaps in this case a more profound reading yields an explanation that true joy is the knowledge that everything that one does in his life is always done before God, in God's presence, and with his involvement. In other words, there is no circumstance where God has abandoned one who puts his faith in him, and this should generate the greatest joy one can ever know. When the sons of Aaron were consumed by a strange fire on the very day that they should have been, that should have been the most joyous in Aaron's life, the day of the dedication of the tabernacle, the Bible records in Leviticus 10, Aaron was silent. Jewish tradition praises Aaron for his silence, as he obviously could have lashed out at God for taking his children from him. However, it's been pointed out that King David, in Psalm 30, describes the many challenges and afflictions he has faced against his enemies and concludes that, quote, he will continue, maybe I will continue to sing praise to God and not be silent, end quote. As long as he knew God was still with him, David could still sing to God and rejoice in any circumstance. In Psalm 118, a similar thought is expressed. The verse states in its simple understanding, I shall thank you, for you have answered me. The Hebrew for answered, however, is related to the word for suffering, and may therefore be translated, I shall thank you, for you have afflicted me. In other words, as long as God was involved in his life, present and concerned, King David was able to rejoice in his portion, even if he had to experience signs of God's displeasure. Similarly, the word for pruning in Hebrew, zemirah, is formulated in the same manner as the Hebrew word for song. What does one have to do with the other? Pruning a tree involves cutting away or destroying a part of the plant. And yet, in so doing, it promotes the growth of that plant. In our lives as well, we experience various types of loss, physical and spiritual, which without denying the resulting suffering and pain, may help us to grow and continue to sing God's praises, even in difficult circumstances. I have seen this sense of faith expressed by simple folk, numerous times in very trying situations. As long as they know God is with them, and trust me, they know and profess it with a level of devotion I'm unsure dwells in my own soul. They not only are silent, they not only hang on, but they continue to offer full-throated praise to the Almighty, even then. Thank you. The famous verse of Psalm 23, even though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I shall not fear evil, for you are with me. Gam kierach begeit samavet, lo irara ki ata imadi. Thank you. It's spun on its head by such people. Fear evil? They not only have no fear of evil, they're marching in the spirit to an upbeat drum of celebration. What a humbling experience it is for me to encounter individuals who truly exhibit faith amidst adversity of a level I rarely have seen. The impact this has had upon me, through their faith, I find faith. Of course, I don't expect that everyone is capable of continuing to strongly maintain their faith amidst tragic circumstances. For most, it could take months or even years to regain a sense of closeness to God after a terrible loss. As I recall from a story I once read, a man lost his child and continued to grieve, mourn, and shed tears for many years. One night he had a dream that he was transported to heaven, where he beheld all the children who had passed on from this world. Each child walked by him, looking content and carrying a candle that burned brightly. After a while, he saw his own son walk before him, also holding a candle. But to his shock, the flame of his candle was extinguished. The father awoke in great distress and immediately ran to his rabbi to ask him to explain why his child's candle was the only one without a flame. The rabbi, his eyes full of understanding and sensitivity, responded, "My dear son, the Almighty himself kindles your child's flame every morning, but your tears extinguish it." After deep reflection upon his rabbi's words, the father made the decision that from that time forth, he would consider his plight in a different manner. Now he lights the candle himself, and the flame that rises up so brilliantly will never again be extinguished. Chapter 7. Would you like to pray? Spiritual and physical healing. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. Psalm 147, verse 3. Page 184. Prayer for the sick. When one visits the sick, Jewish law requires that he pray in the patient's presence to both inspire the patient and show that he and others are deeply concerned for him in his time of crisis. Indeed, it's been suggested that one who does not pray for the sick is in violation of the biblical mandate in Leviticus 19, quote, "You shall not stand idly by the blood of your fellow man." It goes without saying that at times of crisis, prayer is the ultimate example of hope, without which it would be supremely difficult for one to live on in a situation which so mercilessly engulfs him, or the one he loves. Prayer allows one to be uplifted from the pit of adversity, from which it often seems there is no escape, and reach for a higher power, who can either extract him from physical or emotional turmoil, or at least provide comfort through an often forgotten reminder that we're not alone. At times, a relative will say to me, if I'm outside the door of a patient and he's not ready to be seen, "Oh, I'm sure he would not like to see you, chaplain. He's not a religious man." This statement may be absolutely true, or it may be absolutely false. Even if a person has no religious background or religious feelings, it doesn't mean he would not like to speak to someone about his illness and how it's affecting him. Even a person who has no connection to God may yet feel inspired that other people are praying for him and care about him. Chaplain saying, "Would you like a prayer before you're taken to surgery?" "Well, I'll tell you, chaplain, I don't believe in God, but, well, it does seem appropriate that you should pray for me. That is, after all, what people do in these types of situations. So, yes, please pray for me." Upon my completion of the prayer, the patient had commented, "Wow, your voice made me feel so relaxed and at peace that it doesn't really matter that I'm an atheist. The prayer calmed me down and had a very positive effect upon me. I'm absolutely sure that if my blood pressure, which was very high before you prayed, was taken again now, it would indicate that it had gone way down." The fact that a patient is, quote, not religious may be completely irrelevant to the impact that a prayer may have upon them. Page 186, the service of the heart. For the Jewish chaplain, offering a prayer for the sick can initially create a certain amount of uneasiness. Traditionally, Jews do not tend to make up formal prayers, though they may petition God in such a way privately. Instead, we generally use those composed by our ancestors that have already proved effective in the Bible and other sacred sources. After all, who is to say if a newly offered prayer will work? As one great rabbi stated, the Psalms of King David are good enough for us. That's Rabbi Soloveitchik. There are plenty of Psalms from which a chaplain can select. There's also a prayer for the sick that Jews recite in the synagogue with which rabbis are familiar. And then there is the shortest prayer on record, the five-word prayer of Moses, for his sister Miriam when she was ill. Hashem, Rafa, Na'ala. Hashem, Rafa, Na'ala. Another name of God over there. Oh God, please heal her. See Numbers 12. I have used that five-word prayer when a person responds to my question, if you would like a prayer with, if you make it a quick one. Someone says, make it a quick one. He responds, okay, dear God, please heal him. That's the prayer. I have similarly informed such individuals that they should know that I don't get paid by the number of words I use, so there's no need to think I'm going to try to maximize my prayer time at their expense. However, I have learned, as chaplains do, to personalize prayer and to do so after asking the patient exactly what it is to which he'd like to pray. Indeed, according to Jewish tradition, prayer is called the service of the heart. Avodah Shebalev. One never is sure exactly what is in another's heart. You need to ask. Interestingly, physical healing may not be the first concern of the patient, as we have seen in numerous cases, but family issues were in fact more overwhelming. Here too, I've had many patients say, ask for prayers, not for themselves, but for family members who are in trouble because they are now on their own without the patient to take care of them. Page 188, my prayer. Another long chapter. Another long chapter. Let's do another 2 minutes. My prayer. We'll just do this little piece. My prayer. At first, I used a book from which I would read a prayer. After a time, I wrote down my prayers in a notebook that I would read at the bedside of patients. Soon, I had those memorized. Finally, I got used to the idea of tailoring the prayer to meet the specific needs of the patient, but I began with a generic prayer that I had created from various sources. Oh God, full of mercy and near to all who call upon you, be now with this patient at the time of their affliction. We ask, oh God, that you grant the surgeons, doctors, nurses, and medical staff who are working with this patient today all of the knowledge and all the skills that they require to perform a successful surgery or bring this patient toward a speedy recovery. Thereafter, may you bless the patient with good health and vigor, that he may continue to live his life on this earth in happiness and contentment for many more years to come, with his family and with all those who love him. Heal us, O God, and we shall be healed. Save us, and we shall be saved. Jeremiah 17. Amen. The response to this prayer has been extremely positive, but there are times when a patient, based on his unique situation, has interrupted the prayer to clarify some of my words. For example, one patient commented after I asked that she be blessed with good health and vigor. Now, let's not go too far, chaplain. If I can have good health, well, that's quite enough for me. Asking for vigor may be too much at my age. And I don't need happiness and contentment either. Just continuing to live and to be around suits me fine. Another case, I was praying for a 96-year-old woman when I reached the request that she may continue to live her life on this earth for many more years to come. Now, come on, Chaplain Andrew, really? For many more years to come? At my age? Listen, they just reported that a man in Israel who was in the Holocaust and could not celebrate becoming a bar mitzvah to enter Jewish adulthood when he turned 13, just turned 113, and is celebrating the turning 13 that he missed. Now, you have made it to 96 with God's blessing of long life. There's no reason we should expect that you won't keep right on living for a while. Okay, you've convinced me. Please continue with the prayer. The same response came from a 92-year-old woman. May God continue to bless you with good health for many more years to come. Ha, Chaplain, come on, seriously, many more years to come? Oh, so I shouldn't pray that you should continue to live your life on this earth for many more years to come? Is that what you're telling me? What should I ask for then? That God should grant you another 6 months or another year and a half? I see what you mean. Okay, then, many more years it is. Finally, there is this scenario. When I reached the segment asking that the patient be granted life with her family and with all those who love her, an elderly female patient sadly moaned and said, amidst tears, all those who love me? Where are they, Chaplain? All those who love me. I'm here in a hospital bed about to undergo serious surgery, and my four children are too busy with their jobs and their own lives to even call me, much less visit me. Yet another example of what is really ailing a patient and so many others that extends well beyond their physical concerns. We'll call it a day over here because I got an event to get on the road. It's a long chapter. Hopefully you enjoy this half hour. I want to thank everybody for joining us here in Book Club. Always love doing Rabbi Volk's book. We're on page 190. So we're slowly cooking along in the book. Hoping you're having a great time with it. Please join us again next week at 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon for more Book Club. Hopefully we'll mop up this chapter and go on to another one. And don't forget tomorrow night, whether I'm on the road or in live in person, we're going to be doing Isaiah chapter 2. We'll continue with that. And so we'll see you, God willing, tomorrow night at 7:30, either telephonically or in person. I wish everybody a great day. Have a very, very safe day. Safe travels if you're traveling. Enjoy your Labor Day weekend. And God willing, see you tomorrow night at 7:30. Take care, everyone.
Have a good float, yes.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Marv. Hope you enjoyed the book.
Thank you
so much. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
All the best. Thank you. Bye-bye now.